This is the Jerry DePoto Show.
Presented by Ram Trucks.
And Geico. Every Thursday at 3:30 with Danny, Dave, and more.
Looking forward to it every week.
The latest transactions. The breakdown on the Mariners' latest moves. The reason behind the decisions that shape the organization.
I love the time together. It gives me a chance to hold myself accountable.
Now, here's Danny, Dave, and more.
Game 2, Mariners in Oakland tonight. Pre-game starts at 6 o'clock right here, 710 ESPN Seattle. First pitch at 7 o'clock. And we're joined now by Jerry DePoto on the Venue Kings hotline. Jerry, you guys have had a knack for the dramatic this past week. Three really thrilling come-from-behind wins. That was a fun one last night.
There's some of this you can't make up with some of the injuries we've incurred. But you know, at the end of the day, this team really battles, and we're finding ways to pull out wins. And they all count. We're banking them now, and hopefully that benefits us later.
Yeah, certainly you look at it. I was deciding, it was like, you guys have been fortunate in some ways. 4-0 in extra innings games, and run differential's not great, but the record's fantastic. But then you look at it on the other side, two-thirds of your lineup's been on the DL at different points this season already, and it keeps getting stung, but you've had guys come through. Tell me, Dave's been talking about Guillermo Heredia and what he's seen. It seems like Guillermo might really be seizing this opportunity in center field.
He really is. He's running with it. I think you're seeing a two-week now uptick from Ben Gamel that's really encouraging. Gene Segura has really risen to the occasion, I guess, since we lost Robbie to suspension. I think those three guys have notably taken a step forward. And obviously, the things that Mitch has done all year long have been notable. So it's been a lot of fun, and I think and Scott has alluded to in his post game, and we talk about every day. The one thing that really does get lost in the shuffle here is that, knock on wood, our pitching has been exceptionally good for a month now, and it flying under the radar is the fact that for the most part, outside of three blowout losses in April, our pitching has been pretty good all year, and part of the reason our run differential looks just okay, and it appears on paper that we are maybe on the lucky side, it's distorted by three blowout games. And I'm sure other teams in the league can make similar claims, but in our case, it's generally been pretty accurate.
Hey, Jerry, is Gene Segura the best bad ball hitter in the league? I mean, that single he had last night, it just seems like his coverage on the plate, talk a little bit about his ability to hit seemingly any kind of pitch that comes at him.
That's crazy. I mean, I had a chance in my playing career to face a very young Vladimir Guerrero, who was exceptional hitting bad balls. Growing up, hearing the legends of Yogi Berra and how exceptional he was hitting the bad ball. I mean, Gene is as good as anybody in today's game. And it's his ability to get at the barrel on pitches that just don't seem reachable. For a guy who doesn't have exceptionally long arms, is kind of shocking. And, for a guy who's a 300-ish hitter, who sprays line drives around the field, can cover all types of pitches, and you saw it last night, but, in the strike zone or out, he really handles the breaking ball well. And sometimes that's your greatest strength, and other times it can be somewhat a weakness because it does make him a little more prone to chasing on occasion. But, the results are what they are, and they've been that way for 3 years now. And, Gene does this, and it makes you feel pretty comfortable when he comes up there with an opportunity to drive in runs late in the game, because by and large, he puts the bat on the ball and gives you a chance.
If he'd been thrown out on that play in the 10th instead of scoring the game-winning run, you think you guys would have had a fair challenge there? Can you challenge something like that with LaCroix blocking the plate?
You can, and I do think we would have had a fair challenge. And it's easy for me to say now that I think it would have been overturned had they called him out, but it's a funny system. It doesn't always work just like you think it will. But in that particular instance, I think it was pretty clear that was an instance where LaCroix was blocking the plate more like you would have seen 10 years ago than over this generation where we've kind of created protection. And it's for the catcher as much as it is for the base runner, even more so. So, it was the way he received the ball and kind of positioned himself before the ball even arrived is not naturally allowed in the game today. And hopefully no one's any worse to wear. I'm sure it wasn't Jonathan's intent to do that. It's just your natural instinct, particularly as a veteran catcher who learned how to receive a ball, you know, from that area of the field. When the ball's coming in from right center, that's how each catcher of his generation was taught to do it, and he just did it the right way. I think it would have been overturned had the call gone the other way. Fortunately, we didn't have to find out.
Jerry, this is an off-the-wall question. It just popped into my head, so I'll go ahead and ask you. Have you done studies on guys who are sliding and whether is it quicker to go hands first or feet first?
Never done studies. You know, I guess baseball lore or veteran baseball people tell you always that it's quicker to go feet first. And I can't tell you if that's true or not, but I can tell you it's safer. You know, it is safer to go feet first, and it, for the runner, it's safer. It's probably not quite as safe for the catcher in that circumstance, but you know, the way Gene was coming around, and frankly, if he would have gone feet first, I'm not sure he would have been called safe, because the fact is his hand was able to get in and touch the plate through the wickets of John Lucroy standing in front of the plate, you know, blocking the plate. So it would have created a collision, which is why those rules are in place. So I don't really know, you know, from a timing standpoint, the answer to that question, but I do know that the people who've been around the game for all their lives will tell you it's quicker to go through the bag on your feet than sliding in head first. And that sliding in feet first is quicker than sliding head first. I look back at some of the great base dealers of all time, and almost all of them went head first. So it's hard for me to say that there's not some merit to sliding head first from a quickness standpoint. I just know it's safer. And right now I'm all for safe.
Absolutely. Given what's happened, yeah, we should be emphasizing safety. We got Jerry DePoto on the phone for his weekly visit with us. One of the injuries is D. Gordon, obviously, and I know the hope is that he's going to come off the 10-day DL after those 10 days. How big of a concern is his toe in the long-term picture of the season, Jerry?
The great toe, or the big toe, no pun intended. I'd like to tell you it's not a big concern. Anytime a player has an injury, it's a concern. But our understanding here is that it should not be a long-lasting issue, and it's really not an ominous long-term problem. So we believe that he'll be here, you know, just about when he's eligible to come off. So perhaps next Tuesday. And if I spoke to D that he's in a good place, we all agree. And I think D begrudgingly did not want to take the time off, but you have to at least be comfortable on your feet, especially for a guy whose legs are so important to what he does, like D. And he's been such a catalyst for us, such a big part of what we've done. And I would much rather provide him with, you know, 9 days down or miss 9 games now rather than play through multiple weeks or longer trying to play at less than his capacity, because he's too good a player and too big a part of what we do to put him in a position to not contribute in the way he can.
I also heard last week when you're talking to Shannon Dreyer, Jerry, where you brought up the subject of the trade market, and you said that the market's not necessarily open yet, but the lights are on, and it's come on a little bit earlier. I think that you look at the standings and you see a lot of teams. There's a lot of teams under 500 and significantly under 500. What does the big picture look like for the league's trade market, and are things starting to heat up?
I wouldn't say they're heating up, but you know, similar, the burners are on. There are a number of teams that are already engaged in conversations. We're among them, and you know, certainly we have needs that we want to address, and we're tapping into the teams that are willing to have discussions at this point. And like is always the case, there's going to be another couple of teams that determine that they were willing to sell when we get closer. And I've said this, you know, even over the last couple of years, the trade market is becoming increasingly more geared toward teams that are trying to play both sides of the fence a little bit. They're willing to both move assets off their roster and acquire players that fit them, you know, both for the present and long term. And that's everybody's plan A, is if they can do something logical and acquire players that fit now and later and don't necessarily look to give up premium prospect value. We would love to behave that way. You know, we do feel like we have some needs, and obviously we'd like to augment this team. We've played so well, and we're on a great pace, and we're doing it with a lot of character and guts and guile. And we need to give these guys as much credit and help as we can. And right now we're in a position to be able to do that. And whether we're able to do it next week or next month, it still remains to be seen. But we're grinding every day. And there are teams that we feel like we match up with well. And, you know, the trick in any trade deadline is to maximize your returns while minimizing what you're going to have to give up in future value to get it done. And that's never easy, but we're going to do our best.
Hey, Jerry, we were all racking our brains. I know you brought up John Andreoli to the big leagues, and we're all trying to remember something about him. Tell us a little bit about John Andreoli.
John is he's a great athlete. He did not have a very good spring training. We picked him up as a minor league free agent in the offseason. By our estimation, he was the most appealing minor league free agent on the market as far as the outfield goes. 28 years old, he was drafted out of high school, so this is a long journey to the big leagues for John. And couldn't be happier for him that after a decade in minor leagues, he's now getting an opportunity to make his big league debut, and pretty happy for that. Had a really, really good year last year in the PCL, playing for the Cubs in Iowa, and had spent the previous, I guess, 9 years of his playing career with the Cubs. Super athlete. His dad played in the NFL. He is an above-average runner. He's a well above average natural strength. Plays all three outfield positions. Throws above average. Has above average raw power. You know, his bat is a little bit in and out of the strike zone. It's not your. That's if he has a hickey. It's the ability to kind of keep that barrel in the zone and handle all different types of pitches, but. He's prone to the strikeout. He's also willing to take his walks and generally does that very well. So he's got a bit of an on-base presence. And last year he was able to turn that raw ability, the raw strength and power, into over-the-fence homers. And that started to develop for him. And, you know, he's played very well for us in Tacoma, you know, hitting just under 300 entering the day yesterday. And has been really quite hot, and you know it, the combination of outfield versatility, above average running speed, and right-handedness with some power gave us an alternative in a time where we needed it, especially you know missing Mitch for a day, and which we hope is a day, and just not having a full component of outfield with D now on the DL or otherwise second base, we're a little thin out there, and this gave us a guy who's been out in the outfield a lot.
Yeah, and Jerry, you said this guy's been at it for a decade. You know, it's very fascinating to me of how athletes will come around at different stages. And in the NFL, you know, for me, it was like after my rookie year, some guys get it their rookie year. Some guys, you know, wait 3-4 years until it comes around for them. But it's got to be difficult for a guy like this, 27 years old, pretty young. But like you said, he's been in baseball for 10 years, and just to hang in there with a guy like this.
It really is, and it's so refreshing when you see them make it because it really is a journey. And in John's case, he had to grind to get here. It wasn't simple. He wasn't a first-round draft pick. He wasn't a big bonus baby. He had to do it the hard way, and he hung in. And it took a change of organization or a change in scenery to give him a better opportunity, or maybe just our current misfortune with so many guys getting dinged up. Provided him with that. And, you know, frankly, last night, almost simultaneously, Mitch Haniger was hit, you know, just above the wrist. And at that very moment, Jason Worth walked off our AAA field with a hamstring. So we're walking through this, and we had been having conversations about how we could augment our outfield internally. And those conversations really did revolve around Jason Worth and John Andreoli. And obviously, the happenings yesterday made this a lot simpler for us, but John's really earned the opportunity, and I think that's first and foremost credit to him for hanging in and making it a go after all these years.
Yeah, see, silly me, when I heard that Jason Worth had left the game in Tacoma, I just assumed that was to prevent him from being dinged up between then and when you were going to call him up, and turns out that wasn't quite quick enough in that regard.
Yeah, so believe me, I would have guessed that most were thinking that way, but no, it wasn't the case. And Jason did. He had just recently started to heat up with the bat, and you know, timing wasn't great, obviously, on that one or on this one. But, you know, it sure did make life a lot easier in making a decision. This one came down to John Andreoli and how well he had played. And there were many who were advocating for adding him anyway. So it was an opportunity that, again, has been deserved. And it'll be fun to see him out there getting an opportunity to play in the big leagues. It's always nice to see a young guy make his debut. To see a guy who's had to go the long road is even more, I guess, appealing to me because of what that takes mentally and emotionally.
Hey, Jerry, if I were in your shoes, I'll bet the Mariners would be 19-28 instead of 28-19. But I'd be thinking, hey, I'm in the last year of my contract. I want to win now. I got to do everything I can to help this big league team get to the playoffs, the 17-year playoff drought and all of that. But how do you balance that out with the bigger picture?
Carefully. the answer is probably every day, just like we teach our minor league players to do, just like I hope I taught my son to do when he was starting to play, just do the right thing. Do the right thing for your teammate. Do the right thing for the guy standing next to you. Do the right thing for the organization. I've had a chance, obviously, to do this job here now for going on 3 years, and I've done the job for multiple years in other places. And it's, if you do the right thing, it leads to good, more good than bad. And, you know, we're not all perfect. We're not going to make great decisions. But what I try to do with every decision that is made is balance the present and the future. Right now, on the win curve, a win in 2018 is significant to us because we feel like we're a contending team. And, you know, it's very easy to look at the value of a win. And when I say a win, that could be a physical win, you know, beating the A's last night, or it could be a win above replacement. And we have to determine in each decision what value that win has. And right now, frankly, a win in May of 2018 is more important to us than a win in 2021. And I know a win is a win, but we have to balance those. And, you know, it could change. We may not play as well over the next 30 days. But right now, when we're on a pace to win 96, 97 games, and, you know, I'd certainly like to maintain that pace. But at the end of the day, even if we fall off, we are still in a contender's position, and we want to do all we can to maximize that while the window's open. And that win curve matters right now. So I try to do the right thing and pay attention to the value of a win in the moment. And right now, they are important. So we'll behave that way.
Yeah. Do you bristle when people criticize your farm system? And the reason I ask is because I always see these rankings. I heard Jeff Passan the other day with Brock and Salk talking about the Mariners farm system not being very good. I'm just wondering where you stand there when you hear this, if you bristle about that.
Not really. I guess everybody's, you know, entitled to their opinion, and criticism, if nothing else, I'm familiar with. It's part of the gig, and we like our players, and we've generally been very productive. And I know it's not always met with understanding, but your farm system is there for multiple reasons. Your farm system is there to cultivate future Mariners. It's there to cultivate players who allow you to acquire future Mariners. And, you know, I look at our farm system as having helped us produce Ryan Healy and Gene Segura, and I could go around the horn, Ben Gamel and Guillermo Heredia. Well, not Guillermo, but Mitch Haniger. And those, all of those acquisitions, Marco Gonzalez, in total, we look at it from an aggregate. It's total team value. And if you get lost in the weeds on comparing one prospect to another, one draft pick to another, or even a trade, you know, trying to establish comparative value and not focus on the 10,000-foot view, we're trying to stay above the tree line, because at the end of the day, we are not going to win a championship. We're not going to sell an extra ticket, and we're not going to generate an extra Mariners fan by winning a trade, by winning a minor league prospect, I guess, ranking count off. We're gonna win the fan, win the ticket sold, win the championship, win the favor of the Mariners by winning. And I think, as a general rule, there's that since we've been here, one thing we've done is while we've not excelled in the prospect ranking systems, our team at the major league level has gotten better. We are putting a product on the field that I think is entertaining to watch. and the fact that, generally speaking, those same metrics that are measuring the value of prospects are starting to see that maybe our under 30 players are as valuable as most. And you know, we're performing, and that matters. Our team performs, and that's what our farm system enables us to do. And hopefully over a 3 to 6 year period, we're able to rebuild that farm system into something that appeals more to guys like Jeff Passan. And then we win that battle too. It's not like we want to ignore that.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to disagree with one thing you said, Jerry. Not everybody's entitled to an opinion, okay? Some people should not be entitled to an opinion.
Jerry, we always appreciate your time. It's been a blast to watch you guys hanging in, your team hanging in through all of this adversity. And I know I jumped up off my couch last night with Mike Zunino's home run. It's been a blast to watch a team that is very tough and scrapping its way through. Thanks so much for joining us, man.
That's good. We got a good vibe going, guys. And I'll keep coming as long as we keep winning them.
Right on.
Sounds good. That is Jerry DePoto with his weekly visit there.